I call the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting to order. Today is Thursday, April 9th, and it is 9:06 a.m. Members present are Representative Kai Holland, Representative Mike Prox, Representative Carolyn Hall, Representative Steve St. Clair, Representative G. Nelson, and myself, co-chair Donna Mears. I expect Representative Himshute will join us if she gets done with her bill presentation in another committee before we're done here, but we shall see. As a reminder to everyone, please silence your cell phones. And if you need to pass a note to committee members, please get the attention of my aide, Talia Ames. Thank you, Talia. And also thanks to co-chair Himshute's committee aide, Thatcher Brower. Before we get started, I would also like to thank our recording secretary, Sophia Tenney, and helping us from the Juno LIO is Chloe Miller. We have two bills on our agenda today. First, we will have public testimony and more invited testimony on House Bill 379, Service Area Elections, sponsored by the House State Affairs Committee by request. This is the bill's second hearing. And then we will hold public testimony on House Bill 217, Autonomous Vehicles, sponsored by the House Transportation Committee. This is the bill's second hearing. So, also, welcome Representative Carrick. Please come to the table. You are our full agenda today with both committee bills from your committee. So please put yourself on the record and provide a quick recap of the bill.
Great. Thank you, Co-Chair Mears and members of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. For the record, Ashley Carrick, representing House District 35, West Fairbanks. And thank you for letting me bring this bill back before you on behalf of the House State Affairs Committee, and also the Fairbanks community in this case. House Bill 379 simply establishes a process to help streamline new road service area creation and annexation without impacting existing RSAs. In other words, if you like your road service area, you can keep it the way it is, but resolving this issue going forward into the future. Of the five second-class boroughs in Alaska that have RSAs, which is Fairbanks, Matsu, Kenai, Kodiak, and Ketchikan, this bill mostly impacts Fairbanks as the Fairbanks North Star Borough has 103 of the RSAs that exist in Alaska, the most by far. House Bill 379 gives second-class boroughs the authority to abolish, replace, or alter their service areas created after the effective date of the bill, which would be July 1st, 2026, currently in this legislation, or to consolidate two or more service areas created after July 1st, 2026. The hope here would be to put some downward pressure on the number of service areas in our second-class boroughs and therefore ensure more efficient and cost-effective delivery of services. And we do have Mayor Hopkins online, I believe, today, who is the expert on this legislation.
David.
Oh, we don't.
Okay.
What's that?
Briefities. We are back on record with the House Committee on Regional Affairs, and we've got someone else online that will be able to help with questions when we are done with public testimony. It looks like to be a short public testimony, so we wanted to have that set up. So I will now open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room? I don't see anyone in the room nor signed up, so we will go online. And online, we've got David Guttenberg. Welcome to House Community and Regional Affairs. Please put yourself on the record and provide us with about 3 minutes of public testimony.
Hey, my name is David Guttenberg. I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
I currently sit on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. I was a member of your august body for a number of years, and I'm speaking on behalf of support of the bill. I listened to the last meeting, and I realized that the diverse nature of how local boroughs and cities manage their roads and service areas and stuff like that. So this is unfortunately a uniquely Fairbanks issue, because we have 103 service areas in the road in the borough as a second class borough. We don't have road authority. The problem is other people want to organize their road service area, but the process now requires votes in multiple areas, like the area to join and the area that wants to be joined with. And even when there's a financial incentive for the existing road service area, they still vote no, mainly because, well, the reasons that I understand is because the sense of community, they're not necessarily adjunct to each other. The important part of this is that it affects no roads, current road service area or commissions. You know, most of this was established way back when the state, you guys, helped with funding road service maintenance. Right now, that's not happening. This is just a way of people to tax themselves to take care of their road service areas. I'm in a road service area, but I'm on a road service, on a road that's off of that road service area. And in my context, I pay for the road service area taxes, which the borough collects. And then four of us live on the road service, in a road that cannot be part of the road service area because it's too steep and too narrow, which is okay. That's the way we live. But two of us pay for all of the expenses, and the others just ride along and just nod and say thank you. And we do all the snow removal, the road, the bringing gravel. And the side of this, part of this, is that having parity, that everybody pays for taking care of their load. Well, I'll just leave it at that. If you have any questions, I'm here to ask. I didn't catch if the mayor was online, but he is frustrated as well, because he's been trying to manage all of our load service areas, and that's a frustration. So I'll stop with that, and please pass this out of committee.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I appreciate that, and I will. No one else is online for public testimony, so I'll close public testimony. But we do have Mayor Greer Hopkins as well as Borough Attorney Jill Dolan online, from Fairbanks. So, do we have any questions from the committee? Representative Holland.
Thank you, Chair Mears. This is a question. Could go to any of the folks online, perhaps a bill sponsor, but some of this might be a reminder. As I understand this, you know, beginning July 1, 2026, the borough will be able to create some new service areas, and I understand that these will not directly impact existing ones. But in doing so, they will then be able to create service areas, and I'm assuming that comes with it the ability to set a mill rate for services that are delivered within that new service area. And as I understand the original intent of the statutes, the intent was that the people affected by a service area would be voting on creating the service area and then paying the bills for it. And this seems like it's a process that will allow the borough assembly to create a service area directly and to then set a mill rate. And I'm just curious about what the thoughts are on what the public process will be, since there won't be a vote to do it in this case, that there might have been in the past, how the borough and Fairbanks in particular is thinking about the public support and the ability to do this without, you know, and I've got some very specific understanding of the issue of these areas where we have service areas and then don't have them, and there's folks mixed up in there. Some pay quite a bit. Some are thankful that somebody else is paying, but then don't. And this would kind of equalize that. But so public process, since we're kind of changing that, is something I'm curious about how the assembly in the borough might see it, or the mayor, or the bill sponsor.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Chair Mears. Through the chair to Representative Holland, I'll also defer this question to Mayor Hopkins, who's online now. But one thing I would say is I think if you were to poll every single person in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, you'd probably get a little bit of mixed opinion. However, this bill resolves a current serious challenge for a lot of folks, wherein they would like a service area and they can't join an existing service area because it requires an extremely arduous process that essentially excludes them from participation. So for those individuals, this bill helps to rectify that problem. But in terms of questions about how it impacts mill rates, I would probably defer to Mayor Hopkins or our attorney.
Mayor Hopkins?
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, the bill sponsor, for taking the whack at the first nail. I'll take the second nail. The reason we would not be able to put anybody in a service area without them voting first to approve them being put into that service area. We are not doing taxation on an individual before their neighborhood, their area, votes to go in. The problem that we've run into is the current law requires both that neighborhood to vote yes, and then the service area that is in existence would also have to vote yes to accept that new neighborhood. This would allow us to create a new service area going forward and then allow new service areas to join that larger one with only a vote of the people going in. So that way we could say, you're going to join this, you would join this regional service area that doesn't have anybody in it or has people that have already gone into it. And then those people in that regional service area would not have to vote yes to accept that neighborhood. The neighborhood would though have to vote yes to go in. So we would not be impacting any people who don't want to go into a service area and don't want that taxation in that neighborhood. Of course, majority rules when it comes to that service area. So they would, if it's a 60-40 vote, then that neighborhood would go in. But we would be making sure that it meets a certain threshold of financial viability. We don't want two homes on 8 miles of road joining a service area that would then be footing the bill for another one. They would have to, that incoming service area would have to meet a certain financial viability quality of road in order for them to join in. So we're making sure we're not doing basically taxation without representation by making sure people are wanting to go into a service area before they do. And so that would make sure that there's a balance there. And in terms of setting the mill rate, you're right, Representative, we do have a wide variety of kind of mill rates for our different service areas. Some are right around between 1 and 2 mills that they tax themselves at, and some are as high as 14 mills that they tax themselves at because of a very small mill rate area, taxable area. So we're hoping to give some of those the opportunity to level themselves out by joining those regional service areas if they want. But I want to pass it off to Borough Attorney Jill Dolan to talk about what the process is for setting that mill rate by our rural services, if she knows. It's not something I'm exactly familiar with. I asked the experts, and for the time, I'll pass that expert question on to Attorney Jill Dolan.
Thank you, Ms. Dolan.
Thank you. Through the chair, this is Jill Dolan. I'm the borough attorney for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Thank you for the question. So with respect to mill rates, we calculate those as the cost for a service area, so for the taxing jurisdiction. So we would calculate the direct services that they receive. They are also allocated things like a portion of insurance that we purchase and some of our staff time. And so the mill rate is essentially calculated based on their budget each year and any projects that they choose. So if they had capital projects like a road construction project or something, that would also be calculated into the mill rate. Our service areas, on occasion, do, depending on where they are located, they do sometimes qualify for grant funding and are just required to provide a match. So they do have some revenue from grant funding as well. But for an actual just mill rate, it's their budget. It's basically divided by the net taxable assessed value of the properties in the service area, and that's how it's determined.
Thank you, Ms. Dolan. Follow-up, Representative Holland. Yep.
Thank you, through the chair, for the clarification. That's helpful. One just clarification I'd like is if the borough were to define a new service area, set of boundaries, and let's assume for the moment that it does not have any existing other service area in it that shouldn't, and there's not looking at the question of how a service area comes in, but assuming that new boundary is drawn and there is a residence in that service area that's within those boundaries, is there a process, does that resident in that property that's inside those new boundaries somehow have a process where they're voting on joining the new service area that they are inside of by virtue of the boundaries being created? Could you clarify that is a process or a step that's being done? I heard the vote of an existing service area joining, but I want to know about an individual.
Ms. Dolan?
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. So this bill does not alter 2935-490, which does contain the requirement that for a new service area created, a majority of the residents in that area have to vote to form the service area. What this really does is if there are service areas that have been created, it allows them to combine or alter somehow, essentially create one larger service area. So it doesn't take away the initial vote of forming a service area.
Great. Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Let me get back to my notes page. A couple questions. I don't remember the gentleman's name through the chair that was speaking first, but
Mayor Hopkins.
Mayor Hopkins. Yes. Thank you. Couple quick questions on, you know, you had talked about like the 60-40 vote. I mean, it could be 51-49, but then you talked about financial viability and you mentioned balance, and I recognize that you are not looking to strong arm anything through there, but you know, recognizing also that we're in a place where people who want to be left alone are going to be left alone and are not going to show up to vote, so that could be a potential challenge. But to the things that you mentioned, you said financial viability. I don't know what that means, so I was wondering if you could just kind of flesh that out a little bit. And then I guess the second question was, or for me is, you mentioned balance as you're looking at this. You mentioned like two people on like an 8-mile stretch of road. So how are you going to manage those two things? One is you said financial viability. I don't know what that means. And also, how are you going to, I guess, mitigate or work through if there's just a few people on a deserted road that want this?
Mayor Hopkins.
Thank you, Representative Nelson, to the chair. That would have to be a policy call done by our borough assembly. I would be putting forward a ordinance that would outline what those guidelines look like, and the borough assembly would be making a policy call on what that net taxable value would be, as Ms. Dolan was talking about. That's not laid out in the bill because one of the things we definitely didn't want was having to come back again and again and again and be in the predicament that we're in today to ask the legislature to make another small specific change to allow us to fix a problem in the future. Being able to have the flexibility we need locally allows us to solve those problems locally where we can take that best input from the borough assembly, from the local testifiers and the local homeowners. And so we didn't want, when we were working with the bill sponsor, we did not want to put in a lot of specific carve-outs so that we can have the flexibility locally to solve our problems. It would be a policy call by the local borough assembly on what those financial thresholds would be.
So I guess the answer is local control. Mm-hmm. Representative yeah. Nelson, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, it's just kind of a clarifying question probably to the bill sponsor, is that as I'm reading it, you know, Section 1, as was mentioned before by Ms. Dolan, well, I think she said 490, but AS 2935-450, as I'm – well, I don't have the full statute. Is C – Section C with the subsections, mm-hmm. new text underlined. Is Section C a new section?
Through the chair to Representative Nelson, no. So the only portion of this bill that's amended is on page 3 of the mm-hmm. bill, which is under that. It is under Section 1, but it's under in that Section 1, subsection 3, and then it just... That section lists how changes to current boundary areas work. So no, that's not a new section.
Yeah. So just to follow up.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to clarify, the only new language that's being added is the language in bold and underlined on page 3.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. I'm good for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Prox?
Thank you. Through the chair, I guess to either Mayor Hopkins or Attorney Ms. Dolan, currently there's a section in state statute that was implemented 20 or 30 years ago that required the approval if one service area wanted to join or wanted to if a group of people wanted to join a form a service area, they had to first look for an existing service area and the group incoming needed to approve joining and the existing members, the members, voters of an existing service area could say no to somebody else joining them. Is that correct?
Start off with Mayor Hopkins.
That is correct, unless Ms. Dolan wants to expand on that.
Okay, so.
Follow up.
My concern is that that section of statute did result in 100-something service areas, which definitely is a drawback. But the borough could fix that or just let it work the way it's supposed to, and people could talk to each other and work it out the way the service area concept was originally set up in the Constitution. This could be worked out at a neighborhood level. Prue?
Mayor Hopkins.
Sort of. Representative Prax through the chair. The times when our number of service areas ballooned was not after the statute was changed 20 or 30 years ago. It was in the 80s, and the presentation that I gave at the last hearing showed the timelines of when the number of our road service areas ballooned, and that was during the time when the state was giving a per mileage allocation for new service areas to be created. So we had a exorbitant number of them pop up in the 80s was the biggest growth, if I remember that chart correctly. So once the statute went in, limiting or requiring that you have to have two votes, and the grants also went away from the state for those mileage based allocations, the number of road service areas we had did not increase, and it actually decreased by two or three. But what we're trying to do is get new service areas included going forward. And that's the struggle that we've been having, is getting people who want service the service that they want. And so while you could have election after election trying to find a place for a new neighborhood to get that service, what we're finding is neighborhoods are being rejected multiple times as they try to draw in service areas, even if they would be a strong financial benefit. And the example would be the College Acres, which is off of the Parks Highway. It's a very dense neighborhood. And they tried to join one that was slightly more rural, but that had been in existence for a long time. So even though it would be a financial benefit for that, what was called our service area, it was still rejected by our service area for to expand and join. And that was the second time that College Acres had tried to become join a service area, because the previous year they had, a few years earlier, had applied to join the Yak service area, Yak subdivision up off of Chena Ridge, if you're familiar with that area, Mr. Brox.
Yep.
Representative Brox. And so this is the struggle we're having, is time after time, they are being rejected. So while it could be, it is not happening in the manner that allows people who want service to get service at the neighborhood level.
Correct. Thank you. Let me ask that a different way. What is preventing this group that wants to form a service area, what is preventing them from forming a new service area?
The rule in the Constitution, as we view it, where you have to have a new, you cannot create a new service area if one is already being, would be able to provide it. So as we try to find other service areas that would be able to provide it, the College Acres service area is being rejected time and again. So we want to be able to create that regional service area where they could be able to join it, and we would be able to solve that problem that says if one service area can provide service to another one, then you should not create another service area.
So, Representative Prox, I'm kind of envisioning that you've got a job to do and you've got some tools, but you need to go get another one. So that's kind of how I'm seeing the scenario here. Do you have a follow-up? And then we've got other folks with questions.
I would say a disagreement on the interpretation of the service area section in the state constitution. I don't interpret that to say that you can't form a new service area. Because the whole intent of it was people could direct their own lives at the lowest community level. And that has been interpreted to say you can't form another one if there is another one you could join. I don't interpret it that way. If there is one, yes, you should ask the existing service area if you can join. And if the existing service area says no, then you ask yourself whether you want to join your own service area. And it has been local Fairbanks North Star Borough interpretations that is preventing people from forming new service areas. And they have a valid reason for doing that. It becomes clumsy to administer them. But then there's other requirements. What prevents it is the road standards that they insist on bringing the service area roads up to, well, I won't say arbitrary, but standards that people don't have the money to put in. But they would like money to maintain. It's interpretations of code. This is something that can be settled locally in the Fairbanks North Star Borough if we stuck to the concept which forces people to talk to each other if they want a service.
Well,
and this is going backwards from that whole concept.
I'll put that in the form of a question to Ms. Dolan. As the borough attorney for the Fairbanks North Star Borough, do you see the need for a statutory fix?
Thank you, through the chair. There is concern. So it's a combination of things. There's the Alaska constitutional limitation, which there is an AG opinion that addresses it. The AG opinion does stress that the borough assemblies are given latitude in determining whether a new service area should be created. However, they say that the prohibition that's in the Constitution also needs to be considered when they determine that. So with 103 service areas, I think we would be remiss not to consider whether the service can be provided by one of those existing service areas. And when we do our analysis to determine whether an existing service area is available and can provide the service, we do look at things like the geographical locations, the type of roads that are in the area, the current road materials and conditions of those roads, and projected costs. So we look at all of that to determine what an appropriate existing service area may be that they could annex into. The struggle is if we have 103 service areas, there's often multiple service areas that could potentially provide that service. And when you have to do two elections, so you have to do an election of the parent service area plus the area to be joining it, it frequently, I think we have data saying about 40% of the time those elections fail. And so the bill is really an attempt to try and limit the number of service areas, but also get people who are in what we call orphan roads, so roads that are dedicated to the public and were once constructed but are no longer maintained, to get those into a service area and be able to provide it without having to do the neighborhood pass the hat. So in my opinion, a legislative fix is helpful. While I do think it's still going to be difficult, it is helpful, and it's a step toward the borough being able to get service to people and to limit the number of service areas that we have.
Thank you, Ms. Dolan. Representative St. Clair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is, I guess, to the attorney also, because I was along the same line as the chair was going. This looks like an attempt to me to bypass the voters' will in either existing or incoming RSAs. Can you expound on that and tell me why it's not usurping the will of the people?
Ms. Dolan.
Hi, thank you. So as I mentioned, 2935-490 is not being altered by this bill. And that does say that a second-class borough can exercise a power in a service area if the exercise of the power is approved by a majority of the voters residing in the service area. If no voters reside in the service area, then we have to get property owner consent of all owners of property in that area. So that is not changing in this bill. So that is, I think, that's the clearest answer I think I have to your question, is that it's just basically stopping the second election of the people who already have the service.
Follow-up, Representative St. Clair.
Follow-up. So I understand that, but you're not affording the opportunity to the existing RSA to chime in on whether or not the inclusion of this new area to basically, it's a big family right now, and they have no say in the cousin that's coming to stay with them. Shouldn't the existing RSA have a say in the matter?
Thank you. Through the chair, I want to be careful I don't weigh in on your policy discussion, but I do want to say that the borough does still go to the existing road. We have commissions for each road service area. We hold both a public open house, and we get a recommendation from the road service area commissioners that are the representatives of that road service area. So there is still a process. The struggle with elections is, you know, service area elections are slightly different than like a regular election. There is no campaigning. There is no We do provide a lot of information on our website, but it's difficult to get that information to voters and to get interest of voters. We do run them as absentee voting elections, and so there is an extended period of time people can come get a ballot. It's not like it's a set day, but it is difficult to get participation and education on those elections.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Stuart Relay Staff, Representative Carrick. Representative St. Clair, to your question specifically, I would just note that this bill doesn't impact existing road service areas. It provides boroughs the authority to create new road service areas. And also, I would love to turn to Mayor Hopkins for a potentially brief follow-up as well.
Representative Carrick first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, we could also turn to Mayor Hopkins here. But I just want to also maybe push back on the assertion that this usurps local control. I'm someone who lives in an orphan road. If we were to try to create a road service area in my area, what would end up happening is probably some very strange shaped patchwork piecemeal. And I just to confirm that, I'm looking again at the map that was provided in the presentation from before. So what would effectually happen if we were to create a brand new service area is something that wouldn't be unadministerable, for lack of a better word. And there's four service areas right in my area. So we don't really have an opportunity to effectually create a new service area, and we don't have an opportunity to effectually join a current service area under the existing framework. And so as somebody on an orphan road with neighbors who would probably potentially like to have a service area, I don't know that we would see this additional local control option as being a usurpation of our I guess, current situation. Because under the current situation, we just aren't able to have a road service area functionally. We're not able to do that. So I would sort of push back a little bit on that. But I'm sure Mayor Hopkins has more to add here.
I think that's enough on this for now. We've got more questions, and we've got other public testimony to get to today. Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'll be brief. I really appreciate the bill sponsor. It sounds like you guys already have a strange patchwork and piecemeal setup. It's not what you want to do. Also, I recognize that, and I appreciate her like constant desire and vigor for her local issues, and I do as well. The Mat-Su borough is also a second-class borough, so I just want to say that like this, when we're changing the statute, would have this would affect our hometowns. So a couple of follow-up questions, I guess, is to Ms. Dolan. You had said that that the majority of owners would be the ones who decide this. And the way that I read it in statute, and just to clarify, not to get into the semantics, but it's about voters. It's not owners unless – I think there was – if the majority of owners are residing – out of the service area or something, right? It's we're talking about voters, not necessarily owners, correct? Like people, like this is going to go to elections, which I support.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, there's really two different things. One is if there are voters residing in the service area, then the election has to be approved by a majority of those voters. So it has to do with residence requirements, not ownership. However, if no voters reside in the service area, all owners of the real property in the service area have to consent in writing. So there's really two different things in law.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Mayor Hopkins, you had mentioned a particular service area that had been rejected that potentially this legislation would have helped fix. I was wondering if you could just get kind of flesh that out a little bit so I could understand it. I don't live in Fairbanks. And so if this legislation has passed, could have fixed that. You had mentioned one service area that was rejected. I was wondering if you could flesh out like what the proposal was, why it was rejected, so that I could understand it a little bit better.
Mayor Hopkins.
Certainly, just to clarify, Representative to the Chair, you want the story of that specific election?
Yes, ma'am. I mean, it's the one that you mentioned, and it sounded like a pertinent example because you brought it up. So, yeah, I'd like to understand it.
Yes, sir, certainly. So the Borough Assembly has to approve an election going forward in order for an election to happen. They have to approve it. And so on previously, the College Acres subdivision had an election to try to join the Yak subdivision, sorry, Campus Acres. It was that election failed. That is a non-contiguous area, so Campus Acres does not actually touch Yak Road, the Yak subdivision, because as I believe it was the bill sponsor said, we have a patchwork of service area covered across our borough, and Campus Acres doesn't actually touch any existing service areas. So that election failed a few years ago. Then when they tried again, just this past calendar year, the service area that they were looking to join, it was called our service area, and they did not want to even have the election. Our service area has been around for decades and has created its own system and neighborly processes for operating their service area, how they give input from each other. And it's a tight-knit neighborhood. And even though it would have been a financial benefit, a mileage and net property, net taxable value, our service area showed up and said, and testified in front of the assembly and said, please do not even hold this election. We do not want this nearby but non-contiguous neighborhood to join us because we like our service area. So you weren't even able to hold that election for that to happen. So the Campus Acres one election didn't even happen, and they were not able to get the service that they wanted because the assembly listened to the testifiers at the local level and said, no, we're not going to move forward with this election. And all honestly, even if they had, it probably would have failed.
Thank you to everyone online. I'm going to wrap this discussion up for today. Thank you, Representative Carrick and Mr. Relay. We will be setting House Bill 379 amendment deadline for Monday, April 13th at noon, and with that, we will set the bill aside for a later date. And then we do also have House Bill 217 up today for public testimony. Representative Carrick and Mr. Griffin Sukeo, welcome to the committee. Please approach the testifier table and give us a very brief recap of Transportation Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just again for the record, Ashley Carrick representing House District 35 in West Fairbanks, and my staff and I are pleased to bring you again on behalf of the House Transportation Committee, House Bill 217 relating to autonomous vehicles. Just as a brief reminder for the committee, what this bill does is it regulates the use of commercial, and commercial is a really important distinction here, commercial autonomous vehicles, providing requirements that these commercial autonomous vehicles that are being used for interstate commerce, goods, and passengers have a human safety operator in the vehicle. And I'd be happy to answer further questions, and I know we're taking testimony.
I'd like to get to the public testimony. So with that, I will open public testimony on House Bill 217. Is there anyone in the room for testimony on this bill? No? All familiar faces? So I will go online. So first off, we'll start with Robert Singleton, Senior Director of Policy and Public Affairs for the Chamber of Progress. Please put yourself on the record, and 2 minutes, please.
Thank you. Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Robert Singleton. I serve as the Senior Director of Policy and Public Affairs at Chamber of Progress. We are a tech industry association that supports inclusive innovation. I'm here today in respectful opposition to HB 217 because it would impose a driver-in requirement for all commercial autonomous vehicles in Alaska, which would effectively ban the use of this highly beneficial technology that stands to create new jobs, improve road safety, and improve transportation accessibility. By hard-coding a human driver requirement into every commercial AV operation, with no pilot program, no permit pathway, and no sunset clause, Alaska would be the only state in the country to impose such a requirement at a time when both automotive accidents and the shortage of commercial truck drivers are at an all-time high. Research shows that 90% of car crashes are caused by preventable human error, mainly distracted driving and driving under the influence. Thus, by virtue of the fact that AVs cannot drive impaired, let alone violate the programming and thus the rules of the road, this is not a problem. And in fact, the data supports this, because when performing a miles-to-miles, region-to-region comparison, the 127 million rider-only miles performed last year recorded 90% fewer serious or fatal crashes, meaning that every year that the deployment of these technologies is delayed means more preventable tragedies on Alaska's roads. So I'll let my other colleagues talk about the potential for job growth and other considerations, but please, for the sake of saving lives and preventing bodily injury, do not impose a de facto ban on commercial autonomous vehicles, which is exactly what this bill would do while requiring a driver. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. So for the record, Mr. Singleton was calling in from Santa Cruz, California. Next up, we've got Rose Feliciano, Executive Director of the Northwest for TechNet, calling in from Seattle, Washington. Please put yourself on the record, and you have 2 minutes for public testimony.
Good morning. Good morning, Chair. I'm Chief Mears. My name is Rose Feliciano. I'm here on behalf of TechNet. TechNet and our members have a priority for safety, and our AV companies invest heavily in testing and are already operating in other jurisdictions with robust federal oversight. I'm not going to repeat what my colleague said, but I want to express concerns about June 17 in large part because I believe that this will inadvertently restrict or even prevent the testing of AVs. We want to acknowledge that Alaska roads are different than the lower 48, and what our members are interested in is being able to test and provide some opportunities in Alaska. I think one of the concerns that folks have is that, number one, there are driver shortages. We have supply chain reliability issues. But there are also the opportunity for new jobs with the AVs, the logistics, the maintenance, the operation. You know, you have to have folks at either end loading and unloading. And I think that there's some opportunity that, unfortunately, the way HB 217 is framed, it kind of cuts off the ability to even try to test it at all and figure out how AVs could work in Alaska. I don't think that anybody is assuming that they're going to be a complete replacement of human drivers. I think that's always going to be the case. This could help alleviate some of that burden. And then just a couple of concerns. Obviously, we're concerned about the requirement for the human safety operator. And the other big concern we have is the liability that assumes fault on the human safety operator. I think that's counter to how we always figure out traffic accidents, determining who's at fault, because it very well could not be the autonomous vehicle. It could very well be somebody else. So I just want to kind of put those out there for your consideration. We would certainly welcome the opportunity to work with the sponsor of the bill and the committee on figuring out a path forward for AVs in Alaska. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Feliciano, for your testimony. I'd also like to acknowledge that Senator Rob Myers has joined us in the committee room. Our final testifier online, we have Renee Gibson, the Vice President of Government Affairs for Autonomous Vehicle Industry Association from Washington, D.C. Please put yourself on the record and provide your 2 minutes of testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Renee Gibson. I'm the Vice President of Government Affairs for the Autonomous Vehicle Industry Association, which represents the world's leading autonomous vehicle companies deploying AVs across the country, also here in respectful opposition. Nationwide, AVs, including autonomous trucks, have built a significant safety record, and they've driven hundreds of millions of autonomous miles on U.S. public roads alone. This bill would foreclose opportunities for Alaskans to reap the many benefits, safety, economic, environmental, and workforce benefits of autonomous trucks. Safety is paramount to our members' mission, and I know Robert already discussed this a bit. Importantly, AVs do not just drive distracted, impaired, and they never fall asleep. Autonomous trucking also has an important role to play in strengthening our supply chains. Freight demand in the United States is expected to increase dramatically over the coming decades, while the trucking industry already faces significant driver shortage. Autonomous trucks can help move goods more efficiently while also creating new jobs. And we're already seeing this in states that have welcomed AV trucking. These types of jobs are growing in areas like fleet operations, maintenance, mapping, and remote assistance. HB 417 would jeopardize the future of AVs in Alaska and prevent the state from reaping the full benefits of AV technology. In effect, the bill would ban autonomous trucks by requiring a human observer in these vehicles, as companies cannot scale their technology with these restrictions. The bill would also make Alaska a national outlier, as no state has banned driverless operations. For these reasons, we respectfully urge the committee to vote no, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Seeing that we are at the end of our meeting time today, I will close public testimony.
Well, I would just like to ask the testifiers, there was a concern that this would prevent even testing, and I don't see that, and if somebody could send us a note explaining where in the bill how that prevents testing, I would be interested in reading that.
Thank you, Representative Prox. If anyone has got an answer to his question, we've got a committee email, hcra@akleg.gov. So, also recognize that Representative Hemshoot has joined us. I said you were coming. So with that, not quite that. I wanted to set an amendment deadline.
I'll let you finish with that bill.
Quick. Okay. Amendment deadline for House Bill 217 will also be noon on Monday, April 13th. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. A couple quick comments. One is I think I've had concerns with 217. I think some of the testimony today misconstrued the increased danger that this would create on Alaskan roads. So, side comment, throw in shade. I apologize. We can engage with it later. One question I had was on 162. Are we, like, the amendment deadline is removed from that at this point, right? Like, we're still working on the CS and...
So that is for right to repair. Yes, we're waiting for a CS from the bill sponsor.
Okay, and then last question was on the, we'd heard on the IDs, on like the IDs for 1826.
Yes.
Is that amendment deadline still?
For Friday.
So tomorrow.
Do you need more time? We can let's talk offline if we need to make an extension.
Respectfully, I would like to extend that.
And then we can update the group by email, which we will also be doing for next week's schedule. And also, if there's more needed time for either the two bills we heard today, we'll plan to leave a little bit more time in the schedule for discussion on House Bill 217. With that, with no further business before the committee, the meeting is adjourned. It is 10 a.m.